I'm reading from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 to 20 from the Message. Don't waste your time on useless work, mere busy work, and barren pursuits of darkness. Though expose these things for the sham that they are. It is a scandal when people waste their lives on things they must do in the darkness where no one will see. Rip the cover off those frauds and see how attractive they look in the light of Christ. Wake up from your sleep. Climb out of your coffins. Christ will show you the light. So watch your step. Use your head. And make the most of every chance you get. These are desperate times. Don't live carelessly, unthinkingly. Make sure you understand what the Master wants. Don't drink too much wine. That cheapens your life. Drink the Spirit of God, huge draughts of Him. Sing hymns instead of drinking songs. Sing songs from your heart to Christ. Sing praises over everything. Any excuse for a song to God the Father in the name of our Master Jesus Christ.
Good morning, everyone. Lovely to see you. And thank you, Sarah, for that lovely reading. I like to talk about Russian dolls. I remember we went through the book of Ephesians some years ago at a pastoral team retreat. And Terry Villiers, who's online with us on Zoom, gave us an image or a companion alongside Ephesians, the book of Ephesians, which is Russian dolls. The reason is that the book of Ephesians, the letter written by the Apostle Paul, he doesn't seem to have any particular reason why he's written this letter to the people in Ephesus and the surrounding areas. And so Paul is remarkably expansive. He starts off with these big themes in Ephesians. The first three chapters have these big themes in it. And it's like he's starting off large, and then as he goes through the letter, he gets smaller and smaller. And can the people on Zoom see this, Sam? And smaller and smaller. And so it's just a wonderful image as we look at this book of Ephesians and where we are today. Think of the big themes and how Paul starts out with these big themes and then goes down into the smaller nitty-gritty of how we live. Chapters 1 to 3 of Ephesians, as I mentioned, they're expansive and comprehensive. Paul talks about the ways in which God reveals himself in these comprehensive ways as Father, as Creator, and all the promises. Paul also speaks about the ways in which God makes himself known through the Son, through salvation, through what's been accomplished in Jesus, in his life and death and resurrection and ascension. And also Paul has these big views, expansive stories of how God's with us and present with us through the Spirit. And so he starts off with these big, big themes. And then as he goes down to the letter, as these layers have been talked about, he then starts talking about how we fit in to these big, big layers or these big stories. Chapter 4 sort of changes the theme here, or changes the direction, a transition. He goes from the big stuff, and then chapter 4, and particularly chapters 4 to 6, he says at the start of chapter 4, I urge you then, in view of God's mercy, in view of everything I've said in the first three chapters, live a life worthy of the calling you've received. So he starts large and then he gets into the nitty-gritty. Chapters 4 to 6, he says, give up former ways of life. Work together with each other in relationships. He talks about how to worship together. And then he talks about the household, thinking of the Roman household with the father and mother, children, the masters and the slaves, and how that all works out. So he starts large, the big story of what God is doing, and what God has been done for us before we even arrive on the scene, and then in the second part of Ephesians, of how we fit in to that larger story. So whenever we read any part of Ephesians, it's handy to have the larger view in mind and then how we fit in to that larger view. I'm very good, aren't I? I haven't dropped these yet. I bet you're all a bit worried. I'll put these over here. I don't think the Zoom people can see them, but I'll leave them there for you. So it's handy to have this larger view in mind. And this passage today in Ephesians 5, verse 15 to 20, is a part of the letter where it talks about how we fit in to this larger view and this big picture. And it contrasts living wisely against living foolishly. Verse 15, be careful then how you live, not as unwise people, but as wise. And then verse 17, so do not be foolish. Lately I've become aware more and more as time goes on that I really don't know how to live wisely, and how little I know about how to be wise in my life from my own reasoning and conclusions. I've come to glimpse that God is more good, more surprising, more merciful, and more unpredictable than I could ever predict. Coming from myself, I really can't work out how to live well. That's what I'm trying to say. I can't be wise from my own reasoning and from my own ways of working things out. I often pray the prayer from Psalms 31, which says, lead me, God, guide me. One of the translations says, be my navigator. Help me out, because I don't know how to do it myself. I need help. Because there's a lot more going on than we can understand, and there's also a lot more going on in us that we can understand. We really don't know ourselves. I don't know myself that well. God knows me better than he knows myself. And so when we talk about being wise, the biblical story says we don't look within. We require this larger view, realising we're part of something much bigger, something beyond us. And this passage in Ephesians gives us a hint of where real wisdom lies, where it comes from, and how to posture ourselves towards it. So the plan is, I have four parts. And some of you would like four parts of a message. I did this message in Wollongong yesterday, and some said, thank you for the four parts. I don't usually like four parts. Or parts in a message, but it's just how it didn't really resolve to anything that sort of worked out well. So I've got four parts. Some of you like it. Apologies for those who don't like it. But I'll unpack this short little passage in Ephesians with this larger view in mind. And the first part is about the orientation of a person who's wise. What's our orientation? The second part is living that wisdom, as Paul talks about. The third part is an antidote he gives us. When we realise we might not be that wise, or we might see the lack of wisdom around us. And then the fourth part is, what is wisdom? Or I'll answer the question, who is wisdom? So the first point is the orientation of wisdom. What's the orientation of a person who's wise? Now, before I continue, let me not be misunderstood. I said before, as I get a bit older, a bit wiser, or lack of, I realise how little I know. And how little I know how to live wisely. So please don't hear that I think that I'm a terrible person, or that you're a terrible person, or that there's nothing good in us, or that we have to reject our inner being or our inner selves and go live in a monastery and start whipping ourselves with self-flagellation. I'm not saying that. But my confession for my lack is not a grovelling admission that I need a good beating up. That's not what I'm saying. My confession, rather, of lack is simply my turning to God and looking to Him. It's opening up to a life full of hope and full of God, because I realise that I don't have it within myself. I need to realise I'm part of this bigger picture. It's turning from myself and turning towards God and anticipating what God's up to. So I'm not saying that we're bad, just saying that we need that bigger picture of God to come to us. Verse 17 says, "Do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." I've got a question for you. What is wisdom? I haven't answered that yet. What is wisdom? How would you describe wisdom? I had to think about this before I put the message together, and I was answering along the lines of this. Wisdom is being equated. Wisdom is having knowledge, is having common sense, perhaps. Wisdom is getting on with life or trying harder. Would you say that's the general idea of what wisdom may be? All those things that are opposite to being a fool. Like a fool, in order not to be a fool, you need knowledge, you need common sense, don't you? You need to get on with life. You keep the laws, keep your head up and your bum down. Or is it your head down and your bum up? That woke you up, didn't it? Wisdom is working hard and doing all the right things. Now, this idea of wisdom comes from our Western society's idea of what it means to be wise. But it doesn't have much in common with the biblical idea of wisdom. Our society's idea of wisdom is about realism, about getting our priorities right, usually aligned around money, power and prestige, or good health, or autonomy. We learned this pretty early on. My little niece, when she was young, when she was growing up, 2, maybe 3, she didn't want to get help to get her shirt on. And she went around the house and said, "I can do it. I can do it," as her pants were on her arms and her shirt was on her legs. I can do it myself. I'm no fool, that sort of thing. We all grow up like that, don't we? I can do this myself. Not that all these are bad things, doing it yourself, working hard, keeping the laws, but that's not the orientation of wisdom in the Bible. The orientation of wisdom in the Bible is our orientation towards God and looking to Him, realising we need something from outside of us. It's not very popular to say this, and sometimes I have to be careful who I say it to, but our society's self-focus and promoting and being self-expressive individualism hasn't served us very well. True wisdom doesn't look at the individual and our self-expression and finding out who we truly are. True wisdom is an orientation to looking outward to God, beyond the self, which is all about what Ephesians 1-3 is about, the bigger picture. Eugene Peterson says, "We are not adequate to live a life of love and wisdom out of our own resources or our own will. Trying harder doesn't do it." So wisdom, therefore, lies elsewhere. My first point, the orientation of wisdom is not in ourselves but towards God. Doesn't mean that we're bad. It just means that wisdom comes from outside of us. Second point, how do we live that wisdom? Verse 15 says, "Be careful then how you live, not as unwise people, but as wise, making the most of the time because the days are evil." As a church, perhaps in the past, and certainly various parts of Christianity, used to read this verse and think that now is the time that we have to tell everyone about Jesus. And we have to do it all day long, every minute, all the time, because time's running out. Nowhere in the context of Ephesians is this talked about. It's not about going out and telling everyone about Jesus all the time. Perhaps in other parts of the scriptures it does, but not here in Ephesians. What Paul is talking about here is, as we come back to that bigger picture, he says, in view of that bigger picture of what God is doing, what God has done in Jesus and through the Spirit, in view of that, chapter 4 says, I beg you to live a life worthy of the manner of the calling you've been given. What does it mean? It means that it's not about trying harder and doing more and working ourselves to the bone, like it's all up to us, and neither is it about sitting on our hands and being lazy and doing nothing. But Paul says, realising our location in the big picture, we realise that God is up to stuff all the time, in all places, everywhere. And we see our lives every day, every hour, every minute as an opportunity to serve God and anticipate his word to us. That's what it means, all the time, when Paul says that. And understanding what his will is and getting on with it. This could lead some to an obsessive, compulsive lifestyle when you calculate every minute and every hour. You don't give yourself any rest. You can't relax. Well, hear the word of the bigger picture, that we can relax. We maybe sometimes need to hear the word from God, that we can relax in him, to be showered by his love, to allow God to bathe you in your peace. It always comes back to that bigger picture of what God has done and what he is doing and how we fit into that. Verse 18 says, do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. Can you drink wine? Yes. But don't waste it by getting drunk, is what Paul's saying. Don't waste it by getting drunk. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. Make the most of your time, because God is with us and present with us through the Spirit. Make the most of your time, because we have an opportunity to live this life of love, and it's now. That's my second point. How do we live this life of wisdom? It's realising God is bathing us in his love, and every moment he's speaking to us, guiding us, directing us of how to live this life of love with those around us, with each other. Part three, third part. The antidote. Verses 19 to 20 in Ephesians 5 says, as you sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourselves, as you sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourselves, singing and making melody to the Lord in your hearts, giving thanks to God the Father at all times and for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I hold two opposites in my life in tension. One side, I understand that the God created this world, that it's good, that people are made in God's image, that we have so much around us that provides for us. And the other side is that often we see the world around us that doesn't live like this. We see the beauty of the flowers. They are a wonderful arrangement. Thank you, Sarah. The beauty of the creation around us. The beauty of the people in people's pantry, and the joy, sharing a meal, and the laughter of people around us, and their generosity. And yet my heart also aches for the destruction we see in the world, the wars we have. how there's exploitation of our planet and exploitation of people against other people. And so we've got these two tensions, that there are many good things and yet there are many things which are of destruction. It's often easy to sit and notice all this stuff, to complain, to become defensive, to rail against all that's wrong. Easy to become bitter, to either opt out of the world or become a someone who is angry at all that goes on and complains all the time. Here, Paul talks about a third way. And that third way, the way to live wisely and an antidote to becoming bitter or complaining, is thankfulness. Thankfulness. Sing to the Lord, he says. Give thanks to the God at all times in Jesus. And if anyone has an excuse to be bitter or angry or get into the funk, you know how we get into a funk now and then, he has reason, because guess where he's writing this letter from? From prison. He's stuck in prison. He can't get out. And yet, notice what he says. He says, be thankful. He doesn't say, feel thankful. He says, be thankful. I think Paul realises that we just have to do things and then our feelings will follow. So an antidote to this lack of wisdom that might be in us, or the lack of wisdom we see around us, is not to complain or rail against life or just simply opt out and hide away, but it's to be thankful in all that we've got. Psalm 111 is a companion of this text this weekend. I'd just like to read some of it. Thanks for reading it before, Ruth. This is a psalm of thanks. And this is from the Voice translation. Praise the Eternal. I will thank him with all my heart in the presence of the right standing and with the assembly. The works of the Eternal are many and wondrous. They are examined by all who delight in them. See these words. Just delight. The many works of the God are wondrous. We thank him with all our heart. Verse 3, his work is marked with beauty and majesty. His justice has no end. His wonders are reminders that the Eternal is gracious and compassionate to all. He provides food to those who revere him. He will always remember his covenant. And this psalm just keeps going on with this thanks to what God's up to and what God's doing. And in verse 10, reverence for the Eternal is the first step towards wisdom. All those who worship him have a good understanding. His praise will echo through eternity. Often our society's way of wisdom would be to gain knowledge, do things right, common sense. But here the biblical orientation to entering into wisdom, or the posture towards wisdom, is thankfulness. It's simple, isn't it? And yet, how hard it is to enter into this posture. So we'd be best to let the words of this psalm seep into our lives. A psalm of thanks. Now, this is set in the context of Israel and Israel's worship and their story. But it provides us a posture of our heart to live wisely. A posture of thankfulness is this posture of wisdom. That's my third point. An antidote to the lack of wisdom is thankfulness. My fourth and last point is, notice how Paul finishes in this little flourish in Ephesians 5, verse 15 to 20. Verse 20, give thanks to God the Father at all times and for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. The other companion text alongside Ephesians and Psalms 111 is John 6, where Jesus talks about him being the bread of life. where we eat his flesh and drink his blood. Psalms 11 sort of hints at the Israelites in the wilderness eating the manna, the bread that came down from heaven. Here, Jesus says, I'm that bread. I am the source of life. I am the life giver. And so therefore, a person of wisdom is a person who lives in thankfulness and some way participates in Jesus' death, drinking of him, eating of him. We participate in his life. Jesus is the wisdom, something from outside of us. So they're my 4 points. What were they? Anyone remember what they were? What's point number one? Our orientation of wisdom. Point number two, how we live wisely. Point three, antidote to the lack of wisdom. And the fourth point is, Jesus is wisdom. And as we enter into this life of thankfulness and in fact into his death, true wisdom is found and lived out. I like to finish up with Matthew 7 verse 24, which says, it's one of Jesus' little parables, little stories. We sang this yesterday in the Wollongong service, which is put to words, on the solid rock I stand. Matthew 7 verse 24, therefore everyone who hears these words of mine, this is Jesus saying this, and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came and the streams rose and the winds blew against that house and it fell with a great crash. So I'd like you to leave you with that. This, as we live out this life in the nitty-gritty, the Russian doll, as we live our lives out in the daily stuff of life, as we go about our lives, Paul is asking us to see ourselves inside this bigger picture of God's grand work, of God's grand design, of what God is up to in Jesus and through the Spirit. And that, as we posture ourselves towards that, is where real wisdom comes from. I'll come back later for a benediction. I'll hand you back on to Ruth for the last song. Thanks, Ruth.